Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Have you been seriously injured? Mama Justice is here for you. Our medical team partners with top-notch doctors, surgeons, therapists, and urologists, ensuring a comprehensive recovery journey. If you've been injured, call Mama Justice today. We're here for you.
I'm Steve Azar, and I'm on the other side of the microphone, meaning I'm asking the questions this time, and oh, have mercy for the airwaves. I spent 20 years in Music City, wrote and made some hits, traveled the world, and then moved my family back to the birthplace of American music and where the magnolia trees prosper. And now every time I put my feet on Mississippi soil, when I'm off the road, well, I'm at peace. On this show, it's all about hearing the stories straight from the mouths of the friends I've made along the way, their journey to success. Heck, there might be someone on, I don't even know, but you know how us Mississippi types are. We tend to take well to new company. In a Mississippi Minute, all 60 of them. I'm Steve Azar.
It's just like that muddy river, moving slow. Ain't no worries, it's how life goes, baby. In a Mississippi Minute. That's right.
What's up, folks? Welcome to In a Mississippi Minute. Don't forget, before we get started today, there are many wonderful things to do right here in Mississippi. Go to visit Mississippi.org to find out a whole lot more. Today's guest and I go way, way back. I'm talking about like a deep ball, 432 feet over the fence. You know what I'm saying? When we were both in college living in the Court of Governors at Delta State, I used to come outside, look left to my left, and there he was in his karate uniform with his guitar in hand and Rockman headphones practicing away. All these years later, after moving back home, he now shares the stage with me as my bass player. Switching over to the other side of the stage, a professor of practice of entertainment industry studies, director of DMI bands, he's performed and recorded with such top musicians in the world, including the late great Sean Lane, Roger Fisher of Heart, Derek St. Holmes of Ted Nugent, Hubert Sumlin, me, myself, and I, Steve Azar, Jessica Andrews, Charlie Worsham, the Beat Daddies, Charlie Musselwhite, Big George Brock, Dorothy Moore, Jimbo Mathis, hang in with me, everybody, Johnny Neal, oh, I love Johnny Neal, John Mohead, Willie King, Trisha Walker, Christian D'Ambrino, and many others. He's also appeared in internationally recognized music magazines such as Guitar Player, Guitar World, and Living Blues, and also featured in Delta Magazine multiple times, Delta Business Journal, the list goes on. He's a board member of the Follow Your Heart Arts Program. Let's welcome in to the Keep Mississippi Beautiful Studio, my beautiful pal and multi-talented Barry Bays. Hey, Barry.
How's it going, Stevie?
Well, it's good. Last time we were together in 45 minutes straight, we were on the road to play in New Albany, and we had a great time. Ate a lot of food. I think I ate a couple
sure
bags
enough.
Of chips that day.
Big, huge filet.
Yeah.
At the warehouse.
It was good. It was so good. So, Barry, I used to come outside and see you before we even started speaking, and you would be out there with guitar in hand. We both had these, I think we had a substantial version of a mullet, I would say, right, in the 80s?
No comment.
And so, you first
call
of all,
that then.
First of all, tell me about your karate days. I obviously grew up with, you and I have talked with Jerry Catawor and the Catawors. Jerry's one of my dear friends growing up, and they were world class. I mean, traveling all over the world. Your time with
they
them,
are.
And when did it all start?
I started karate and guitar at the same time when I was 21. And so, I started guitar very late. I was playing trumpet and piano and everything else before that. But I kept running into these two guys at the old greenhouse that were playing from the coast. And they were really good. They played acoustic guitars, and they were always playing at the greenhouse. And I would go in there and watch them play, and we got to be friends. And they talked me into joining this karate class. And, all karate is not the same. You're sort of partial, I guess, to the one you're in. But I really think that Shotokan was the best. I had such a great teacher, Jerry Catawor Jr. and Sr., and their sensei, Takayuki Makami. He lived in New Orleans,
right.
I think he's the one that brought Shotokan over to the U.S. But these two guys were the quietest dudes, and I just thought, you know, karate dudes were these, you know, I had a certain preconception of what
right.
they were. And these
more
guys were real
right.
quiet and
right.
and
they were reserved,
super nice
sure.
and polite.
Right.
And they talked me into joining this class. And Haley Bennett and I, we've known each other since elementary school. We both started. And it was a lot of sweat there. Actually, right here where we're sitting in this gymnasium is where we had our Cleveland karate class
yeah.
for a long time. So we were on this end because there was somebody else on the other end. We were sweating right here where we're sitting.
Did you ever think or do you ever ponder on the fact that you've never left this spot?
Well, you know, like everyone else, I thought I can't wait to get out of here, you know, meet people and so I could
right.
play music and play on records. And then I ended up not having to leave to do all of those things. So I met Sean Lane in Memphis and that,
yeah.
and we were traveling all over the place. And so
I
never
get
had
into,
to leave, you know.
I want to get into the Sean Lane thing because I know you are like brothers. And I know that was hard to for you to watch him pass, especially the way he did. That was heavy, very heavy on you. It still sits heavy on you. But back up to you come to Delta State. Were you playing some other instrument? Were you in the band? How did you and Haley meet? Because obviously Haley's a great drummer.
Yeah, from Grenada. We're both from Grenada. And so I was at Delta State on a trumpet scholarship.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And then, you know, believe it or not, one of the greatest trumpet teachers in the world from Los Angeles happened to be here in Cleveland for a wow. short period of time. So I said, well, I'm going to go there, you know, and study with him for a couple of years instead of going to Berkeley or somewhere, because I had yeah. enough to go to Berkeley for 1 year. And then I found out this guy, Mike Ewall, was teaching trumpet here. I was going, well, I don't care about
Los Angeles.
I'm going to, you know, if he's here in Cleveland, then I'll just go to Delta State and
right.
study. And then I'll play in Chicago or Blood, Sweat, and Tears one day when those guys die.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
never they're still alive. So
is Berkeley in L.A. by the way?
Berkeley is the
Boston?
College in Boston
in East Coast. That's right. It's in
I came here, you know, studying trumpet, and then I was in between my junior and senior year is when I kept running into these two guys and. They talked me into joining karate class,
and then
I started playing guitar all at the same time, so it was all intertwined.
Do you feel like your trumpet playing gave you a leg up when it came to understanding the guitar
no
better?
Oh, no doubt, because I was, you know, picking stuff off of records on a trumpet, you know, my whole life. So when I started playing guitar, that was a natural progression. I was it was actually Haley's brother, Lane Bennett. He played trumpet. And so we would sit at his house in the afternoons after school and pick out, you know, the Little Rascals and Looney Tunes
right.
and whatever we could, Hawaii 5-0 and Dragnet, all of these different things off the TV. And then later on, recordings, you know. And so when I started playing guitar, I was already had a pretty good ear, I think, you know.
Yeah, you know. I look back and I was just so driven to do it because I wanted to put my words that I was writing to make them complete the process and have a song, you know. So I was in such a hurry to learn. Do you look back and go, I mean, I saw you outside like with those fingers moving faster and faster and, you know, and all that. Do you feel like you just sort of, do you remember that time going like, okay, I need to hurry up and learn so I can play in a band?
Oh, yeah. That was the motivation right there. I had these other friends of mine from Grenada, and they already had a band going, and it was only one guitar player. And I was going, you know, I'll play with y'all. Just give me a few weeks, you know. And so I literally just, you know, got some I knew what music consisted of, you know, chords and scales. I'd already had all that in college, and so I just knew what I had to do was just get my hands up to where my brain was, you know,
right.
the same
moving.
Level as my trumpet. So I just learned the all these scale patterns, you know, the cage system, and so that I could learn Randy Rhoads and Van Halen and KC and the Sunshine Band.
Yeah.
And so I really just practiced from my birthday is when I started on June 5th. And by July, I was playing in at the Green Door and in bars with these guys.
You're talking a month later.
A month later.
Wow, that's crazy. Well, I know you as a very dedicated, you're very profound and in your the way that you treat music. I mean, it's so respectful, you know, and it's like you're so glad to be there. You are, Barry. I mean, it's a treat to look back and see you on stage, and you've got this just I'm in heaven kind of look in your eyes. You know what I'm saying? And I've always appreciated that about you, and just how versatile you are to go from one stylist to another has always really amazed me. We're going to take a break, but I just got a text message from who else? I love this. Jerry Cadawar right there. Oh. See, Jerry he retired from UPS, and he's in Baton Rouge, and they came to visit, but I had to go. I didn't have to. I couldn't wait to go see my daughter at Arkansas this past weekend, but they were all coming to town. We have this high school group chain that we all grew up together, and Jerry needs to get a job now because he starts off early in the morning texting, and he's always challenging us how many free throws you can make today, how many this and that. But, no, such a great friend, and obviously somebody you want on your side. You talk about karate and the fact of him and his dad and mom and sister, they were always extremely like the last person that you would ever thought would get in a confrontation. Oh. But they're also the last person you'd ever want to get in a confrontation with. We're with Barry Bays, my man. We're at the Delta Music Institute, Delta State. This is where this is like our own little Home Depot. If you're like to love to build, this is our toy store right here. You're in the Keep Mississippi Beautiful studio. Go to visit Mississippi.org to find out a lot of the cool stuff you can do, like right across the street. Go check out the Grammy Museum. Anytime, it'll blow your mind. You're in a Mississippi Minute. Stand by.
In a Mississippi Minute with Steve Azar. Right here on Super Talk Mississippi.
I'm Steve Azar, rolling down a Mississippi highway with my pal, great musician, Barry Bays, in the Keep Mississippi Beautiful studio. Go to visit Mississippi.org, folks. I know I wear you out, but I can never tell you enough of how many wonderful things we have to do right here in this beautiful place we call home. So, Barry, you're at Delta State, and in 1 month you pick up the guitar, and all of a sudden you're doing all your karate and you're playing music. When does your band with your former wife and stuff that you guys had, that because we were all playing around the same time.
Yeah.
We were going to Stan's Press Box, Stan Sandroni, the great Stan Sandroni. We miss him so much. Which turned out Abby ends up buying it, and then it turns into Abby T. Well, Sweat Box, or what do we call it? What was it after Stan's?
Stan's Press Box, and then the Firehouse.
We called it Sweat Box because we sweat in there.
Yeah.
then the Firehouse, yes. Then Abby T's. Yeah. So we grew up playing these parts, and then the Junction, and all the places around the Delta. But when does y'all's band start? And because don't forget that year, we also, my mind's starting to remember things. We did the big Spring Fest, used to be a big deal.
Well, yeah, I just found some pictures of that, got them scanned.
You wearing spandex back then?
Well, I'd wear a funny shirt maybe, but I never could do like, you know, some of my other friends were like serious dressers, you know.
Yeah.
I was just too reserved.
I wasn't doing the spandex. That wasn't going to happen.
I didn't even have parachute pants, so I just wore pretty much what I wear now, blue jeans and a T-shirt, every now and then a funny shirt. Like Eddie Van Halen would wear these funny-looking shirts, you know.
Yeah. God, we miss Eddie Van Halen already. Yeah.
I played with a bunch of people really in that first year or so, just anybody that would let me sit in with them just so I could meet people and get experience. And I just fell in love with guitar just out of the blue. Like, I never really thought about playing it till I did, and then I was hooked. I pretty much only played the trumpet for when I had to for my lessons and the ensembles and stuff, you know, but I was spending the rest of the time like 6 or 8 hours a day practicing so that I could play those Night Ranger and Randy Rhoads solos, you know, in the bar. And when I met my girlfriend, she played guitar. We were both taking guitar lessons at Delta State from Kerry Ault, classical guitarist, but he had played electric guitar previously, so he liked rock and roll and all that. But he was helping me really with my my right hand for, you know, how to file your nails. That takes like a couple of years to figure all that out, to play classical guitar, and that's where I met her. And then we started a band up with Haley and another guy, Brian from Grenada, and the name of our band, when we opened for you out on the quad, that band was YYZ, named after the Rush song.
Yeah.
So we played YYZ. Like,
yeah, you played the heck out of it.
You should see these rednecks I grew up with, you know, trying to dance to Rush, and they did. We were playing that in the South Fork Saloon in Grenada. And we played Kansas and Rush and Styx and stuff, and everybody liked it. You know,
who was singing that? Like Styx.
Eddie Coleman was a classical pianist at Delta State.
He could sing, he could get all that stuff.
Yeah, he could, you know, he would like blow people's minds because he had never really been in a band. And then he ended up being in a band with Preston Watkins and Keith Wood and the other guys. I think he sang with them some. But yeah, man, we were all trained musicians. And we took it very seriously and played like really difficult stuff. And I got a video of that, of us playing out there on the quad.
YYZ. Just playing Rush with all that. I mean, that's insane. I remember
grew
the first time
to it. So.
Oh, well, you remember the first time you saw or heard? Or you heard?
Yeah.
I guess first time we heard Rush, I was like, "Oh, what is that?" You know, like, "Oh my gosh!" And then you find out it's three of them, three guys. It sounded like there was three guys, a freight train full of musicians, and I mean, it was like a lot coming at you. Just amazing, amazing talent. So you're playing guitar, and you guys are doing all that. You graduate Delta State, right? Tell me what happened.
Yeah, by at that point, I had graduated. So I started playing guitar my senior year, and I graduated right then. And then a year or so after I graduated, I was in the Morrison Brothers Music Store. I was in there all the time. You know, they got tired of me. They eventually hired me to work in there. Like, look, you're in here every day. Why don't you just... this guy came in and said, "Can you show me how to do that?" I said, "Well, I guess I can, yeah." You know, he said, "I'll pay you." So I started teaching him, and then another guy, and then another guy.
You've been teaching ever since.
I had like 41 hour lessons a week there in that music store. They hired me because I was, you know, bringing all of these people into the store, and they were buying strings, and people would come in and just play the guitar and go, "Oh, this guitar plays great."
So and you sell it.
They started giving me commission, you know.
I was about to say, did you need me as your agent back then? Because I hope they
you know,
taking good care of you.
I had it made, you know. I was just get up in the morning, play guitar, and get to the music store at 10, play guitar all day, and then leave the store and go home and sit on the couch. And
then
play
y'all play weekend shows, right, all the time. Right, so you're doing that. When does the switch from guitar to bass come about?
Well, I was playing, you know, a bunch of bands. I've been doing jingles and stuff. I'd like to mention my cousin's studio in Grenada at some point.
Sure, let's do it right now.
So before I started playing bass, I was going over back to my hometown in Grenada all the time to play. Even though I lived here, I would just go and stay at my mom's or Haley's or somewhere, and we would play, do whatever we had to do. And my cousin, Budley Bays, he knew everybody. Roland James that did Elvis. So I got to work with Roland James, you know, a bunch of people I don't even remember. I didn't really start writing those sessions down then like I wish I would have. But Budley had this nice studio in the old theater. It was huge, like not as big as this, but it was, you know, good size theater. And he would have all kind of people from Muscle Shoals and Memphis coming down to record in Grenada to get away from the rat race, you know.
Wow.
And Roland James would come down to Grenada all the time and record.
See, I never knew that.
Up and coming people. And Budley would get me or Danny Lancaster, somebody to play guitar on these demos, you know.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
probably some finished records. I don't even remember some of the stuff I did. I have to go back and look at these folders at the chord charts, and then I
and
go,
you
oh,
keep
yeah.
all that. You're really good about keeping all that.
So I was doing all of that, just trying to meet people. And I read about this guy named Sean Lane, and I remember Kern Pratt telling me about Sean Lane, and I was more into, I mean, I like Eddie
so
Van
Kern
Halen.
Kern at the time was playing with me, for folks that don't know, Kern's in Jackson, a great guitar player growing up, so that's just a little backstory on Kern, and so keep going, I'm sorry.
So I met Sean and was just really hanging out with him, me and I would even take some of my students up there, my girlfriend at the time, wife. We would go up and just spend the night, and just he was a genius, you know, read 8 or 10 books a day. And he had been out of the limelight for quite a while. He had, you know, been famous earlier on with Black Oak. And he was doing all of these sessions, and I would take him to these sessions because he didn't drive. So I would drive him to down. You know, he played with Al Capone, man.
Wow.
Yeah. He played on all kind of sessions, and he was doing the Highwayman session with Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, yeah. Chris Christopherson, Johnny Cash. And he was him and Reggie Young, famous Reggie Young. They were the two guitar players on the session. Doing that session, Reggie, you know, said, "Hey, Sean, you know, what you've been working on lately?" They have been friends forever. And Sean gave him some of his latest stuff.
Insane.
And Reggie freaked and gave it to Jim Ed Norman, who was vice president of Warner Brothers, in Nashville.
Right.
And so they offered Sean a deal. And I was going, "Hey, Sean, you know, you're going to need a roadie. Like, I want to do that. You know, like, I'll drop everything and take off with you." And he's going, "Well, why don't you play bass and change my strings?" I was going, "Well, that sort of, you know, when a guitar player plays a bass, it sucks." And I said, "That's going to be bad." And he and he goes, "Oh, man, you'll get it. Like, just, I have faith in you, work on it. You know, I'd rather have..." He said,
"Y'all
he'd rather
be
have
together.
Me."
I get that.
"Since we were friends."
Right.
Because he had all these other, like, big bass players breathing down his neck.
I got
wanting
it.
To play with
he
him.
He wants to be on the road and go to breakfast with you and all that.
Yeah,
and, be
and
with
it
his
was
brother.
All about hanging. And so, you know, he could have got somebody a lot better than me, but he didn't want one of them guys who might be a jerk or not want to hang out. That's how I started playing bass.
I want to talk. We're going to go into a break, but I really want to keep continuing talking about Sean Lane because you and his relationship was great. For people that don't know, I wish what we would do to be able to have Sean in this room right now and interview him.
Holy moly.
He was just insane. One of the greatest guitar players in history, right?
And keyboard player. Just all-around musician.
Yeah, it was just nuts. God gave him an incredible gift. His fingers could move lightning speed, and it was melodic. You know, it was like you got both the best of both worlds. We're at Barry Bays in the Keep Mississippi Beautiful Studio. Go to visit Mississippi.org, folks, this weekend. You got so many cool things to do right here. You don't have to go too far away. We're a drive-in state. And that means that, as my man C-Ray, the head of tourism, always says, that it's right here. It's right in front of you. A lot of great historical and cultural things. A lot of fun to do right here with Barry Bays. Barry, you get to play DJ. We are the birthplace of American music. I don't have to tell you that. You know it. You sing it. You preach it every day of your life. Would you like to hear Albert King or Eugene Powell into the break?
Man, Eugene Powell. Everybody needs to know that.
That's what I'm talking about. That was my mentor. We'll be right back. Here's a little Eugene. Sonny Boy Nelson. Let it ride.
Doesn't sleep, and neither do we. Fox News Radio, late breaking, up to the minute, from around the world, around the clock, here on Super Talk Mississippi. In a Mississippi Minute with Steve Azar, right here on Super Talk Mississippi.
In the Keep Mississippi Beautiful Studio, go to visit Mississippi.org. Plan your next getaway, even if it's a day trip or a weekend trip. We got it all right going on. It's all going on right here in Mississippi. Barry Bays is my guest today. All right, we're going to talk Sean Lane right now because obviously huge impact on your life and still sits in your heart, heavy in your heart, and on your mind. I just love listening to you talk about the times together. Tell me what that was like, you guys being out there. Was that really sort of your first break into, you know what I mean? Like all this stuff was happening, but far as a bass player.
Yeah, before that, you know, I was just playing really just around the southeast, you know, maybe down as far as Florida and Georgia, but not, you know, it's just cover bands.
Right.
And I didn't really, other than you moved off, I didn't really know many people doing original music, you know. And when I met Sean, he was playing with a band called the Willies, and they played six nights a week on Beale Street, and then they might do a little run at the Alfred's East, which closed up, but they were playing at Alfred's on Beale Street. And I mean, like Kern had been telling me about him. And I had this friend I was living with. I was sleeping on the couch. With five DSU athletes. They were all still in school, and they partied pretty hard. And my bedroom was the living room, so I couldn't go to sleep until
I love how you said they were the athletes. They weren't supposed to be in shape. We're supposed to be the guys that are a mess. But we've actually been very more disciplined than most people
think.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, so my roommate there, he had just moved up to Memphis, and he lived next to Alfred's East. And he said, man, y'all got to come up and watch this guy, Sean Lane. He said, you're going to lose your mind. And I remember Kern telling me about him. And then my friend who knew me, he goes, you know, it's not that he's fast. That's not it. It's just his sound was so different, and what he plays was so different. And I said, okay, I'll go. And so it was like the day after Thanksgiving, and I was married. And so me and Shelly went up and stayed with him. We walked in Alfred's, and the band was on a break. And so we got a table right there in front of the stage, like 3 feet right there, you know. And I didn't know what Sean Lane looked like. I mean, I had this one magazine, had his picture in it, but that had been years ago, you know. And so I didn't know what he looked like. So this guy comes in, and he sort of sitting there doing some crazy stuff on the drums. I was going, man, that roadie's pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, he was playing the drums. You know, he just had on some old shirt, you know, and like not didn't look like the musician.
Right.
And then he really started doing some crazy stuff, like at a really low volume, just looking around the club. The music was blasting, but we were sitting close enough that I was going, holy crap.
Yeah.
You know, that must be the drummer. Like, the roadie ain't going to play like that, you know. And then he walked over to the keyboard and started playing these chords like movie score, you know.
Yeah.
And I was going, wow, maybe that is a roadie. He's trying everything
out.
He's
very good, though.
And then he started playing some crazy, like, it sounded like Art Tatum to me. I started getting, you know, freaked out, like, that must be Sean Lane. Like,
yeah.
I didn't know he played piano.
Yeah.
And then everybody else came walking in. He grabbed the guitar, and they went right into something, and they just, you know, you ever had like an adrenaline rush so heavy that you were scared? Like, this needs to stop because I'm going to like pass out here. And that right there was, I can't even describe it. Like,
right.
The next thing to a religious experience, it was like all of a sudden I felt like I was sitting there looking at another Franz Liszt or a Beethoven or somebody. It had nothing to do with the guitar.
Right.
It was
beyond
like
that.
Something that was coming through him that really, you know.
Right, it was inspiring.
I was looking over at my wife and going, she was same thing. Like, we were both going, what the heck, you know.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the adrenaline just kept coming for like 45 minutes.
How do you guys go from all of that, and you're obviously like blown away, but how do you guys become such great friends? When does that happen?
Well, we went outside during a break, and
it's old school. That's what we did back then.
There were some dudes talking to him, and I could hear him like asking about picks and strings, and I had already read that he didn't like talking about guitar. You know, he didn't really care about guitar at all. But I did just want to talk to him, like, because it's obviously he was a genius, you know. And so I gave him, I had just started teaching at Delta State, and so I had these Delta State cards on there. And it didn't look like I was going to get to talk to him because these guys wouldn't leave him alone. And so I just sort of interrupted. I said, hey, man, here's my card. You know, like, I'd like to talk to you when you get a chance. And he went, oh, wow. And he just sort of blew them other guys off. And he said, like, you teach, like, music at a college? So he started asking me questions. Like, well, no, I want to ask you some questions.
He
was asking me all these questions. And he just forgot about them other guys, you know.
Yeah.
And he was just so wanting to know everything about me, you know. And I was going, man, like.
So you talk about him in books and stuff, right? Like, so after, now you know, because the discussion you and I had the last time we were on a road trip, you told me about he knew what was inside every book. He was a prolific reader, right?
Voracious, big words,
right? But right, so
oh, yeah.
he lived for it, right? He loved to be educated. So I think, don't you think, looking back, that was probably him going like, wait a minute, you're an educational institution respected as Delta State. You're teaching. And that was that intrigued him.
Yeah, know? I mean, you know, they went back and played. And when they got through, you know, he said, we sat there and talked for like an hour outside.
Yeah.
And he gave me his phone number. I was going, man, like,
yeah, you guys hit it off. Yeah.
And we came back up and saw him again the next weekend back on Beale Street, and we just hit it off. And he, after like the second or third time, he invited us over to his house after a gig. Mm-hmm. And that's when I found out that he was really like a genius, you know. So right. He had all of these books. What we went back in his studio, and there were all of these books lined up, about 50 of them against the wall, you know. And it was butterflies, every book that you could probably check out on butterflies from the Memphis Library, which is a world-famous library at the time, you know. And I said, oh, man, what are you doing with those butterfly books? Your daughter got a project? Yeah. He's going, no, those are I'm reading those. I went, what? And then he got really lit up. Oh, yeah, you got to see this. And he reached way back and picked out book number 32 yeah. back there and pulled it out right to it. And then he showed me this butterfly, and its wings looked like a person's face. And he, all of those long names, you know,
he knew
the names of all these. And the next time we went over there, he had dinosaurs, so he was getting all into that.
Wow.
And he had already read them already, but he would just go through these phases. He'd get really into one thing,
right.
You know. And then, like, if I remember one time, you know, like I said, he would ask a lot of questions. We were sitting in this restaurant, and this guy comes up to him and says, hey, you're Sean Lane. They start talking, and turns out this guy was an exterminator. So this guy's trying to ask Sean about picks and strings, and yeah, he starts asking him.
Are you kidding? Like, he flips
so
it quick.
He wanted to know, like, how does it affect their nervous system, and what all these things.
Yeah.
He would, like, just pick your brain. Whatever it is you do, he would pick your brain.
So for folks that don't understand, we're talking about Sean Lane right now, truly one of the greatest guitar player musicians ever, and he was a savant. It was like watching Good Will Hunting, you know, the movie. You know, this brilliant mind that could absorb everything he saw, touched, felt, read, and then it would come out of him in this incredibly beautiful way. And you guys got to be so close. When Joe Walsh comes to town, because I had a couple nights that I wish I could forget with Walsh. But
he had an
apartment Walsh was
there.
Obviously attracted to Sean as well, right?
Oh, yeah. He would sit in with the Willies all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably thinking, like, what is this? You know. With Barry Bays, by the way, everybody.
He remembered Sean from the Black Oak, Arkansas years when he was a kid, you know.
Right. This is crazy. Crazy, crazy, crazy. So we're going to go into a break. There's never enough time. I have a strange feeling this is going to be at least two parts, because I really want to start talking about all the people that you've recorded with and all that. We'll probably get that in part two with my pal Barry Bays. We got a little time left in a Mississippi Minute. It goes by fast with me and Barry because, you know, we like to roll like that. Go to visit Mississippi.org to find out a great, wonderful getaway that you're going to take this weekend, and tell them I sent you. You're in the Keep Mississippi Beautiful Studios always. I'm Steve Azar. You're in the Mississippi. We'll be right back. The good folks at Guaranty Bank are proud to announce their 10th annual holiday toy drive. Drive will run now through December 18th for the children at St. Jude Research Hospital and Blair Batson's. As part of their drive, they want to celebrate how far they've come since its inception in 2010. This year, they're collecting gift cards in lieu of toys. Because there are so many children in need, they need you to help them make 2020 the best turnout yet. Gift cards can be dropped off at any Guaranty Bank location between now and December 18th. Their goal is to collect 1,000 gift cards between their 22 locations. Examples of gift cards suggested by their partners are iTunes, Google Play, Xbox, Kroger, Hobby Lobby, Michaels, McDonald's, Visa gift cards. Make Christmas extra special for these precious children and their families. Go to gbtonline.com for additional information. Guarantee Bank, member FDIC.
In a Mississippi Minute with Steve Azar, right here on Super Talk Mississippi.
There ain't no street in this town where the memories don't let them go.
I think it would be wrong for us not to finish this one complete Mississippi Minute with talking about the loss of Sean, and for you, and how it affected you. You're playing bass at the time now. You guys start playing together. I want to finish this party chapter of your life and then start getting into celebrating how the heck you guys started with Norbert Putnam, the DMI, how it all came to be, because it's become such an important part of your life, from the karate days to we're sitting in this studio right now, and you and I are always blown away when we're, people just have no idea that we've got one of the greatest studios in the world sitting right here where I played basketball, you did karate, and it's just insane. And the education that the kids get is superior here, and prepares you for the entertainment business. These days, the entertainment business, you got to be all in, and you got to be willing to handle the hustle. I mean, you got to get yourself, develop yourself, and this place helps you do that. Record labels aren't developing artists anymore. They're saying, tell me your story, tell me you're already kick and tell, and then we'll take it from here. That's sort of the model that it is now. We're Barry Bays. We're at the Delta Music Institute. He is a professor. He's my man. Also shares the stage with me many times now. We're not sharing any stage right now. It's a sign of the times, and hopefully we'll get through all these trying times, and COVID will be an afterthought and in the history books, and we'll get to go play again like we used to. You're in the Keep Mississippi Beautiful studio. Go to visit Mississippi.org to find out the cool things you can do right here, especially in the Delta. So many great things. Barry, Sean and you start playing bass. So how much time goes by between the time that you have that conversation with him, you guys are starting to hang, you're seeing what he's all about? When does the time happen when he says, I want you to play the bass? And then how long did that last?
Well, really up until he died, although he died in 2003. But we met, it was Thanksgiving of 88. And so for the first couple of years, we were just hanging out, and I would go sit in and play guitar, you know, when he needed to take a break, you know, doing some cover songs, you know, we'd do some Joe Walsh or whatever. And after he did that Highwayman session and got his Warner Brothers deal, then I started playing bass. And so right away, my cousin Budley, that had the studio in Grenada, he found out I was playing bass, and we put together like a blues band. And me and Budley and Danny Lancaster and Haley Bennett, and we started just tearing up the North Mississippi, Oxford and Grenada, yeah. Especially private parties out the lake. And Danny, if you don't know who Danny Lancaster is, he was one of the greatest guitar players in the world to me, you know, just like nobody else. You know, he could have played with anybody, but he just, you know, had a hard time sticking with somebody.
We've all ran into that, fortunate guys.
To play on his record before he died, that was great. But I was playing with Danny, and we were doing festivals and stuff, and you know, one thing leads to another, and I little Dave Thompson saw me. I started playing bass a lot with little Dave, and
right.
I played with I had been playing guitar with Brad and Brenda and Freddie, you know, Freddie Banks,
yeah,
was a huge influence
yeah, right.
on me
yeah.
on the bass. And when he died, then I turned around, I started playing bass with them some.
Right. You know, when you're in the studio, it's important to be comfortable. You know, and then come on, you and I both know, you know, I've written with some incredible historical writers. It doesn't mean that we wrote the best stuff, though. And I used to walk in there thinking, well, this is going to be the greatest song ever. I'm about to have a hit. And it didn't work out that way, but I learned a whole lot.
Yeah, it's always a learning experience.
Yeah, and when the hits happen, that's on God's time. Well, we're on a Mississippi Minute time right now, so we're gonna head into another one. I appreciate you taking the time. We've been my pal, multi-talented Barry Bays, toured the world, played with some of the greatest musicians, recorded with them in history, and I've been blessed to have him share the stage with me since moving back. You're in the Keep Mississippi Beautiful studio. Go to visit Mississippi.org to find a whole lot of cool things you can do right here. Come see us in Cleveland. That's where we're hanging out right now, at the Delta Music Institute. Go to the Grammy Museum. Check out Clarksdale. Ground Zero. You can go to Greenville, Mississippi, to Doe's. Head to Indianola. Go to Club Ebony. The B.B. King Museum. So many cool things. And I know I'm leaving things out like the Jim Henson Museum in Leland. It goes on forever. We're right here. I'll see you later. I'm Steve Azar.
I'm Steve Azar. In a Mississippi Minute, all 60 of them, where you can take your sweet time. I'm Steve Azar, and I'm on the other side of the microphone, meaning I'm asking the questions this time, and oh, have mercy for the airwaves. I spent 20 years in Music City, wrote and made some hits, traveled the world, and then moved my family back to the birthplace of American music and where the magnolia trees prosper. And now every time I put my feet on Mississippi soil, when I'm off the road, well, I'm at peace. On this show, it's all about hearing the stories straight from the mouths of the friends I've made along the way, their journey to success. Heck, there might be someone on, I don't even know, but you know how us Mississippi types are. We tend to take well to new company. In a Mississippi Minute, all 60 of them. I'm Steve Azar.
It's just like that muddy river, moving slow. Ain't no worries, it's how life goes, baby. In a Mississippi Minute. That's right.
What's up, folks? Welcome to In a Mississippi Minute. I'm Steve Azar. Heading into your weekend.
Woohoo!
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Go to visitmississippi.org. Check out all the cool things you can do. You can visit these cool blues and country trail markers. Come visit me in front of Jim's Cafe. The killer Jerry Lee Lewis, his mile marker is right where he grew up. And Nesbitt is home. It's just a lot of cool places you can go check out. So many great blues trails. Oh, my goodness. It's just insane. All the places you can check out, the history, and really helps you appreciate this wonderful place we call home in Mississippi. Also, you're in the Keep Mississippi Beautiful studio. I'm back with part two of my man, today's guest, Barry Bays. So, a Mississippi Minute with Barry and I, you should see us going down the road or in a plane or wherever we're going. The conversations, just they're thick and they're long and they're intense. So no one Mississippi Minute could contain us. A world-class musician and a world-class soul. That's what he's got. We share the stage. We share the studio together. A professor of practice of entertainment industry studies, the director of the DMI bands. He's been recognized in high-profile music magazines. I mean, when you're a kid and you're reading Guitar Magazine or Guitar World, I mean, to be in that magazine is like you have arrived. Living Blues, the Delta Magazine, Delta Business Journal, et cetera, et cetera. He's a board member of the Follow Your Heart Arts Program. So let's get back to it. Part two with my pal, my bandmate, my studio mate. Just really good dude in the Keep Mississippi Beautiful studio, Barry Bays. Hey, Barry.
How's it going?
Barry Bays. I like that. Keep it low. You'll never find. Anyway, okay. All right. So we talked about doing this interview at 5 in the morning, how low we'd be. But now we're a little wired on coffee, and I appreciate you spending the extra time. I know you're busy. I want to talk about this place. After this, I'm going to let everybody breathe for a second. But this blows both of our minds. And you were a part of the conception, the vision, and here from the start, before it ever, you know, wasn't a basketball gymnasium, right? And classrooms and ROTC and all that. So take me back with Norbert Putnam, who's been on our show, the great Norbert Putnam, Muscle Shoals legend, Elvis, Margaritaville, you name it. I got to understand how this all went down.
All right. I'll back up a little bit about how I met Norbert. This is funny because my cousin who had the Domino Recording Studio in Grenada, Budley Bays, he's a prominent musician and producer and writer. I was home one weekend, and he said, "Man, you're never going to believe who just bought a house in Grenada." And I went, "I don't know, Elvis?" He went, "No, it's close. Yeah. Elvis's bass player." I went, and I first was thinking about what's his name, Chef, and then I went, "Why would he move here?" And then for some reason, I said, "Norbert Putnam." He said, "That's right. He just bought the Dubard house downtown Grenada and fixing it up. And he had bought the Masonic Temple downtown and was making a studio out of that. And I said, man, like, and so Budley knew him. So he, I said, we got to go talk to him. And so I went and met Norbert, and we hit it off right away. He's a really funny guy. And, you know, he was asking me questions like what I did and who I played with and all that. And I told him, you know, I was teaching music over here at Delta State. And he said, well, what kind of recording program y'all have? I said, we don't have one. Like, they, you know, it was just a classical music program. So, but for years before that, my friend Scott Coopwood, who plays rock and roll, he had a studio at his house in Shelby before he had one here. It's now up above Delta Magazine, but we would record out there at in his studio. He did the Cracker Jacks and a lot of people there, Doug Scarborough's record. And, you know, he was always befuddled why we didn't have a recording studio at Delta State. And we were always trying to figure out some way to raise money, and it just never could happen, you know.
Between glasses of wine or between beers. That's when the inspiration flowed. No, I love
red.
It. You're cracking me up. Build a studio. Now we're talking about what we're sitting in right now.
Okay, well, we were not thinking of this. I mean, our idea was just like, you know, something like that corner over there, just big enough to put some drums in. And, and you know, so the students, I was teaching 40 or 50 one-hour lessons a week at one point.
Wow.
You know, and there's rock and roll and country, some jazzers, one or two classical, but there was just no place for anybody to record. So, you know, I was, you know, just a lowly instructor and had no say-so, and nobody was really interested in recording there, so nothing ever came of it.
Right.
So Scott met Norbert, you know, the same time. This is 97 when Norbert moved to Grenada, and his wife Cheryl had family there that was getting older, and I think that's why they moved there. And he loved Grenada, you know, he loved it. And so anyway, he started coming over to Cleveland to go to KC's and meeting people. And he was just one of them kind of guy, you know, like the Bennett House and Franklin and Quadraphonic, all these things that he came up with in Nashville. He just, you know, said, well, y'all need to have a recording studio here in Cleveland. We're going, yeah, we sure do. And so he came up with this. Well, first he came over looking around and meeting people, and next thing you know, he's got Fred Carl on board and Morgan Freeman and a bunch of doctors, you know. So one night at KC's, a fabulous restaurant that's no longer here, you know, I mean, I think they came up with about, I don't know, it was like $60,000 just one night at supper, you know. And then it just went from there. And so the dean of the arts and sciences at the time was a good friend of mine, an artist, and his son, so that was Collier Parker, and his son, right, Chris Parker, was taking lessons from me, and we played gigs together. And so, you know, the dean got on board, and it just took a while, but
we're talking, you know, about $60,000. Just let's talk about that. Well, how much is the board, that board that we're in Studio A, cost? Quarter of a million?
Man, probably close to half. I'm just guessing, you know. And then it had to come from England. That's a solid state logic, SSL.
So it's more than a quarter of a million.
I think so. I'm really not sure. Like,
But just to show you, this is one piece of gear in this facility, and the facility is what used to be a basketball court. But there's Studio B, C. There's all studios, but there's no curriculum. So I'm trying to understand how you guys go from a recording studio to a full blown curriculum like this. So I didn't mean to interrupt, but
well, we were looking. Norbert was just looking at this little grass area behind the music department. You know, and thinking with this money, you know, whatever they raised, and they kept raising money, you know, and we're just looking for a place. Like, we're going to build a recording studio, just not the program that was came later, but just a studio for the students to record and write and maybe teach a class. Norbert said, I'll come over there and teach a class. And so Collier said, well, yeah, we could, you know, just have the one recording class. And Norbert said it'd be fun to teach people, you know, like directly. And so just looking at a little place behind Ziegel over there is, and so we were getting all excited. All right, we'll have a little nice little cute recording studio to do stuff in. And then he found out about this building, and I got pictures of us walking around in here with some of his friends and the people that started kicking in the big money, you know,
before it ever happened.
Yeah, still it was still karate and ballet and stuff in here, you know. And just walking around looking, he's going, man, you know, we need this building. You know,
wow.
And
I can have a hard time understanding the vision of, obviously we know how good this room sounds, right?
Oh,
that blows my mind. So we're going to go into a break because I want to understand. I want you to continue on this journey of the DMI and how it all came to be. But, you know, I still see me lighting up the scoreboard and just kidding. Anyway, you know, just shooting a lot of threes. Whether I was hot or not, I was shooting a lot of threes. I had the green light in here. You're in the Keep Mississippi Beautiful studio. Go to visitmississippi.org. Come see us at the Grammy Museum here in Cleveland. Come to Greenville. Have a great dinner. Eat at my pal's Jim's Cafe, where my mile marker is, where my country trail marker is. Pretty cool. With my pal Barry Bays in the Keep Mississippi Beautiful studio. We'll be right back.
In a Mississippi Minute with Steve Azar, right here on Super Talk Mississippi.
When you got Barry Bays, the man on the bass, actually started on guitar. I still see visions of him in his karate uniform practicing away. You knew that it was going to be he was going to be a lifer. It was going to be forever. In the Keep Mississippi Beautiful studio, go to visitmississippi.org. You got plans this weekend? Change them. Check it out. Plenty to do right here in this beautiful land we call home. Barry Bays, so Barry, keep going. Let's keep rolling for a minute. Okay, so you and Norbert, you come in here. You've gone from a little, you were talking about building a little place outside of Ziegler back here in a little green space. And now you've come in and he's been starstruck with the room. And obviously his eyes and his experience tells him way more than you and I would have said.
Oh,
but would you have ever envisioned this Studio A, right?
I mean, it's, you know, the way that he was talking about this, I was going,
well, you think he was crazy? Norbert, we love him.
No, I didn't, because at this point, you know, I had known him for quite a few years, like 97, 98, 99. This was like 2002 or something.
So this is 5 years in the making.
Yeah, this was way later, you know, 2002, and just him meeting Collier, and Collier was on board, and then the president at the time thought this would be a good idea. At the time, I had the president, Dr. Potter, you know, said, why don't y'all have like a DSU blues band? It was 2003 was the year of the blues, you know. I was going, well,
the blues. Sorry.
Nobody's really interested in that. And he said, well, let's make it happen, you know. I said, okay. So, you know, he told me, you start it up and we'll make it a official course. And
wow,
you know, I said I can get the gigs.
That was the beginning of the first curriculum right there.
Well, this was under the Delta Center, so that's what I was doing about the time this was all going. You know, later on, once it got going, they worked it out to move me out of the music department and then over into this, so that Norbert would have somebody to help him. You know,
So y'all are the only two. In the beginning. Okay.
Right at the beginning. And then he got Willie Pavier, world-class engineer that did all these George Strait number one hits.
Yeah.
And he had done a lot of work for Norbert. And so
he came down for a while?
Yeah, he stayed here in Cleveland for a few years.
Wow.
So just right off the bat, we had about 70 or 80 students in the program.
Really?
You know, but it was not, we didn't have a program yet, so it's only classes. And
I got you. The way
I remember it, you know, we couldn't have a major or whatever because I think Valley maybe had one going, and being close proximity, we couldn't do it. So it wasn't until Valley no longer had their program that then this one got started. But right at the beginning, you know, these students were literally, you know, having Norbert was showing them how to position a microphone, and he was teaching the classes.
Guys, you're talking about Muscle Shoals. You know, him and
Jimmy
David
Buffett,
Briggs.
No,
I mean, you're right. He produced Margaritaville, et cetera, Dan Fogelberg. But he played with Elvis. So did David. And these guys came from Muscle Shoals. All that history, all those records made. Rick Hall. You know, it's just insane amount of music history. Insane. I mean, I know that they played on 1,000 number one records. I know David has, so that means probably Norbert has.
Norbert's on like 10,000 songs.
It's, yeah, you're crazy. But number ones, 1,000? How do you, 1,000? That means, and it was really, you know, you and I both know musicians are key, man. So they were just hit factory.
Yeah, he just knew how to lay it down on the spot.
At what point do you occupy it all and all the classrooms are full and all this is going on? Like, take me to that place.
You know, it took a while and then increments. When Norbert was here, we only had what is now Studio C upstairs. That was the only studio we had. And he brought his personal Mackie recording, hard disk recording system here to use. That's what we had at first, you know. And so it was all up in that one room. He got an office down here for Willie so that they would have, they had two offices. So it was just that side of the building.
Right.
And then got the money to start renovating and doing things.
Like George Brine and Lucy, Paul and Lucy Janice and the Sanders and the. So y'all start, and then obviously Fred Carl, all these relationships start to, you know, the people that really are concerned and care and compassion about what we do. They love music. You know, they understand the value and how it molds kids, you know, and also our history. You got to have something like this to help continue to grow, right? The next generation and the next generation.
Like I said, right off the beginning, it was just a whole lot of like really super talented people. Most of those people are still active. You know, they took the courses and then just started moving off and playing or doing whatever they do.
Yeah.
But at that point, you know, there was no degree in this. It was just the classes, and these folks were going, I don't care. I'm taking a microphone class with Elvis's bass player.
Right, part of Delta State's whole, you know, you could take, okay, an extra, it was extracurriculum, right?
Yeah. And, you know, so all of, it took a while to get the degree and all that going, and then to when they started, I got pictures of this just being a wood frame right here, this spaceship we're sitting
John
in.
John Meredith
know.
Obviously built
this,
right?
Yeah, man, he's great.
The English guy.
Yeah. He was funny,
talent.
Too.
Yeah.
So, you know, Norbert doesn't remember this, but I remember him, like, drawing his concept on a napkin, you know, just talking to people in KC's about what we're going to have there at Delta State. And people just thought
Abbey
it
Road.
Was nuts.
So,
yeah,
so how does he go from how does he see this room, and how does John design it and develop it to sound great? And what are they looking for when they're looking for that? You know, what exactly?
And then I can't remember this architect team that worked, you know, very closely with John and Norbert to get all this finally drawn up. And then the plans are out there in the hallway, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can see how, you know, this is divided into two rooms there. And when they were just constructing, working on all this, just to walk in here every day and see – like, this is really happening. I was freaking out. Like, why didn't we have this, you know, when I was in school? You know, I love classical music, but I didn't want to do it for a living, you know. But that was the only choice I had at the time. But to just walk in every day and see the progress, it was just
if you're going to do classical
mind-boggling.
Music and do it for a living, you'd have to go to New York or go to some big city where it's owned 24/7, right?
Yeah, Memphis. You know, I have a friend that graduated from here. He's principal trumpet with Memphis, Scott Moore.
Right.
But just to see the final plans and you know, when you finally realize, like, this is really
happening.
Yeah. And people just thought, y'all not going to do that, you know. So
back then, they were offering classes that were, you know, obviously not in people's curriculum, but they counted as a credit towards graduating. That's basically it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Outside, you know, we had a lot of students. Willie left, and then we got another guy, Mike Acapelli, came in. After Norbert, he had a house here in Cleveland, and he would stay here during the week and then go back home on the weekends, you know. Mm-hmm. And
that gets hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It
takes. And so eventually, I think, you know, he was looking for somebody to take over and run it. And so that's when Trisha Walker, we found her. Norbert, I think maybe Norbert and Collier somehow found out about Trisha. And it just so happened
here.
Yeah, that she's got her own story about this, you know, how she was looking for a change and been in Nashville all this time. And when this opportunity came up for her to come here, she said it was just like the right time and all that.
Yeah.
You know, and then once she got here, and then Valley, you know, they no longer had their program. And, you know, after she got here, we got our degree going and, you know, actual entertainment industry studies degree. You know, things started moving really quickly then, you know, and the building was done. We had PV gave us a lot of stuff for live sound. You know, we had like a huge outdoor PA system, and I had that DSU blues band morphed into the band called Old School Review, and it moved from just doing just blues songs to R&B, funk, soul, Stax, Atlantic, Motown.
Yeah.
And I would use that as a way to educate people, you know, where everything came from, you know, not just blues.
Right,
but
you were talking the history of it all, but it obviously all started here. We're going to go into a break. Speaking of where it all started here, we are the birthplace of American music. This is where else would this be sitting, this spaceship we call Studio A at the Delta Music Institute. Go to visit mississippi.org. Everybody, find out what you're going to do tomorrow, or maybe today, or maybe in the next 30 minutes. Plenty to do. You're in the Keep Mississippi Beautiful studio. I'm with my pal, Barry Bays. Barry, DJ again, 2 days in a row. Not many people. By the way, Norbert Putnam got two straight interviews, so this is fitting that you're one of the probably four or five people I've done double duty on. Would you like to hear into the break Paul Davis or Paul Overstreet?
Overstreet.
Little Paul. I love Paul, my brother. We love you, Paul. Let's do a little Paul Overstreet. I'm Steve Azar. You're in a Mississippi Minute. We'll be right back.
Yeah, daddy's come around and mama's late. Staying out all night of drinking. And everything's better on the home front now than meeting in the middle, working it out. He finally figured out he's got something worth keeping. Yeah, the daddy's come around, mama's way of thinking. And everything's better on the home front now than meeting in the middle, working it out.
In a Mississippi Minute with Steve Azar, right here on Super Talk Mississippi.
I'm with Barry Bays in the Keep Mississippi Beautiful studio, hanging out on a Mississippi highway that now sits a spaceship called Studio A at the Delta Music Institute. I'm spending a lot of time making records here now, man. This is like, I feel like it's my own personal little space, you know. And I appreciate you guys inviting me in over all these years, Barry. You guys have always been really supportive and acceptive of me, and our relationship has grown, and it's just always a blessing to be on stage and in the room with you, in the studio with you. You're world-class, pal. Go to visit mississippi.org to find out all the world-class musicians that have graced the land of Mississippi. We're certainly humbled to be here. Barry, so this curriculum finally becomes a real deal. What year does that happen? Can you recall?
I'm just trying to think. We were getting, we had quite a few classes by 2005. I'm trying to remember exactly when Trisha got here. It might have been 2007. And she was a good bridge between the creative musicians and then the college setting, because Norbert really didn't understand, you know, having to wait around, you know, and
I'm not going to use the word bureaucracy. That's not what we're talking about. But just the way that things are done in an educational environment has to be done exact. Norbert's not. Come on, man. That ain't Norbert. You know,
he just want to like build it right now.
Yeah,
you know,
let's go.
Get the stuff and
for what we'll deal with it later.
Send somebody the bill. You know.
Yeah. That's all right.
But you know,
so Trisha
finally got done. Oh yeah, and you know, also, you know, she had a master's degree in music. So she and you know, being a musician, like a songwriter and a guitar player and keyboard player, and then understanding the college thing. So she was a good balance there between us and what we had to do to get the program, you know, to further it along, you know.
I've had a lot of conversations with Trisha, and I know you have. I think deep down inside, she wanted to always lean toward being creative, but at some point she had to lean toward the other way. I mean, like it was taking away her creativity because she was dealing with, you know, running this place. So, and I understand that. And you also have to be patient and build relationships. And she's done such a great job of that, but now she's not here anymore. Now, Richard Trammell, who's done a great job, who shows up in the middle of all this. And we love him. He's great. He's been great. And he likes to buy gear, which is awesome. Right. We love it. We love a guy that buys new toys.
The students need, you know, they need to know about everything.
Yeah,
so
no. Now they have to.
Getting them what they need.
That's important, right? So the place is built. You've had all this transition. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about the importance of today's musician and how they, Audrey over there at the board, I'm looking at Audrey. You know, she's a heck of a songwriter and an artist. But she's sitting there manning the board because she wants to get great at the engineering side of it to make her art better. But also there's the business behind it. How many people have been messed over in our business? I mean, so many times, bad contracts, bad deals, bad people. You know, it happens in every business. It happens in ours. So you're going to learn if you want to absorb it all, you're going to learn it all. And as you develop yourself, you have to have all these facets to be able to move forward as today's musician. Don't you agree?
Yep. And we have, you know, our, you know, what started out is just two people now, you know, we got just about everything covered. So, you know, Trisha had her stuff that she was good at, and Charlie Abraham, like there's nobody like him, the stuff that he's done.
So good. Incredible experience in the music world, period.
Oh, yeah.
You're talking about promoting a show forever.
Concerts. I mean, so many concerts I went to see in Jackson. You know, he was putting them on. You know, Jubilee Jam.
With our man. Yeah.
Tower Power and James Brown.
With
Journey.
Malcolm White.
P-Funk.
Guys, right?
Neville Brothers.
Yeah.
So he knows how to teach that side of it without using the book.
At what point in your, is there ever a time maybe you look back, Barry, and you go, I'm still doing this? I do that all the time. And go, like, we're how old we are, how, you know, we're in our mid-50s, right? And although we seem like we're still kids at heart, you know, and I think music does that. I think it keeps us young at heart. What other profession allows you, first of all, if you're able to, it's like your football career is going to end. Your basketball career is going to end. Mm-hmm. Your baseball, all sports, it's going to end, right? But ours gets to continue if we take care of things. And obviously you have to take care of yourself. You have to keep living and take care of your body and all that, and your mind and your soul and all that. But the fact that we're blessed to keep doing it, do you just go, wow? I mean, I do. Sometimes, you know?
Yeah, you know, it's really when someone else points it out. Like,
I'm pointing it out, as you can tell.
I have friends that are excellent musicians, but they chose some other career path.
Right.
For whatever reason, but they still play music on a regular basis, you know.
Right.
There were so many people that I met, you know, back in college.
Well, we talk about Haley.
Yeah, oh, yeah, Haley and I
both played with
Haley. He's still playing all the time.
He's incredible.
But yeah. I was just thinking about some of the first musicians I met when I came to college. Like one of the bands I used to see, Chance from Clarksdale.
Totally remember.
Those guys, you know, and then Ronnie Drew and Jack Phillips just melting your face, you know, with these rock solos. And the bass player, Terry Moore, I still see him. He's, even though I was a guitar player, I was a trumpet player. And then I became a guitar player, and now I'm a bass player.
It's interesting. You're talking about all the musicians, and I was in it like Forbert and... because the local guys, John Kilzer, you know, in Memphis, who's passed away, God rest his soul. But some of these guys, Jimmy Davis, they were a little older than me, and they were songwriters. And I was into all of that. And then, obviously, Eugene Powell for me. We talked about Eugene on the last show. He was the guy that he was, whatever he was talking about back there. I know some of the stuff he was doing, his cover stuff, he just grew up doing. But every once in a while, you know, a lot of times I say, he'd just go off on a tangent and it was beautiful. And that's why I wanted to write songs. So I was in tune with that guy. And you always talk about, we always talk about the difference in between me and you, but we can't, we have to have each other. So if you were on one path at Delta State when I'd look left outside when I'd walk out the dorm. I was on another path. And it's just funny how life eventually has you collide, you know?
Yeah.
It's crazy, isn't it? Looking back. I remember being on the T-Box, and it was Ben Bufkin, and I was with Dr. Scott Nelson, and they were talking about this going down, this place. Yeah. And I said, hallelujah, this makes, you know, I used to go, man, if we'd have had this when we grew up, and I always talk about that. I mean, where would we be, you know?
Yeah, if this would have been going back then, you know, I was playing trumpet in R&B and funk and soul bands. It was really not any of the rock bands that I was watching had a place for a horn. Like I was talking about Chance, those guys were playing hard rock. And Terry Moore, great bass player, you know, I still see him. He comes to Cleveland a good bit. But, you know, he was a big influence on me. Just the way those guys looked, you know, it was just so cool to be playing rock. But I was a horn player, and I could only play with horn bands, you know, but when I started playing guitar, then all of that stuff that I'd been watching, these guys, was now coming out, you know. But if we would have had these studios here then, those bands could have been in here recording, you know.
Come on, exactly.
The horn bands I was playing in with, you know, there were a lot of bands in Cleveland there back at one point, you know.
There was an incredible vast amount of extremely talented people here.
The Tangents, man.
Are you kidding me? Charlie
Duff
and those guys.
And Fish, I mean,
think,
Mickey.
Think about all the players that we, the Brown Brothers, Bo Ridgway. We can go on and on. It was insane, the talent level.
Greenville.
It was so much around you at all times. We couldn't help but be eaten up with it. You're in the Keep Mississippi Beautiful studio. Visit Mississippi.org, folks. Visit Mississippi.org. Check it out, please. So many great things to do, especially while we're sort of contained a little bit. This is the time to really take advantage of that. I'm with my pal Barry Bays, world-class musician, teacher. The man is the man. You have to keep missing the beautiful studio. Come on. Folks at Guaranty Bank are proud to announce their 10th annual holiday toy drive. Drive will run now through December 18th for the children at St. Jude Research Hospital and Blair Batson's. As part of their drive, they want to celebrate how far they've come since its inception in 2010. This year, they're collecting gift cards in lieu of toys. Because there are so many children in need, they need you to help them make 2020 the best turnout yet. Gift cards can be dropped off at any Guaranty Bank location between now and December 18th. Their goal is to collect 1,000 gift cards between their 22 locations. Examples of gift cards suggested by their partners are iTunes, Google Play, Xbox, Kroger, Hobby Lobby, Michael's, McDonald's, Visa gift cards. Make Christmas extra special for these precious children and their families. Go to gbtonline.com for additional information. Guarantee Bank, member FDIC.
In a Mississippi Minute with Steve Azar, right here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Oh, how a second Mississippi Minute with my pal Barry Bays in the Keep Mississippi Beautiful studio goes by so fast. We're probably going to get some lunch after this, just FYI, even though it's after lunchtime, because we're musicians and we're supposed to have just woken up. I love how we're viewed as, you guys stay up all night, you don't get up. And I had musicians that had full on the, you know, my first big producer, Barry, had full on the windows. And would wake up, and at 3 o'clock, we'd start. Rafe Van Hoy, the guy was brilliant. One of the greatest songwriters in the world. He wrote, when he was 17, What's Forever For? The great Michael Martin Murphy song. You know, so what's the glory in living? Doesn't anybody ever stay together anymore? And if love never lasts forever, tell me what's forever for? Who writes that at 17? Anyway, Rafe and I, he would wake up at about 11. We'd already written a song, already had dinner. And I had babies at the house, and one last, our baby girl on the way. And he'd wake up at 11. We've already made a record. He'd look at me. He'd go, hey, like he just woke up. And I was like, oh, God, this is not going to be good. Because that's 3-4 hours later. So I was literally working on octane. I mean, I had no fuel in the tank. But it was a glorious time because we knew we were doing something special. You've been doing it for so long. You play with so many great musicians. Has there been anybody that stuck out besides Sean Lane, who was a brother to you, who you lost at a very young age, who was one of the greatest in history? Anybody, and besides me, funny, I'm being funny, somebody that you really enjoy going out and playing with, or somebody that you were in awe of?
Shoot, I mean, the way I think about music is I played in a couple of bands. It was really just for the money, but I got to a point where it was just not worth, you know, if I don't feel something from the music, that I'm not going to do it, you know. Once I started playing with original artists, that was just the greatest thing, even though if it meant less money, you know, than, like, you know, when you're playing in a hotel band in those kind of bars like Abbey T's, you'd make a lot of money. But playing with artists like, I mean, I love playing with you. Your band is just slamming, you know. It's just like breathing. Yeah. It just flows, you know. Everybody's so on top of it. So.
I mean, you know, that's important. I mean,
that's right.
We've had the same guys for a zillion years, and you became family instantly. Everybody agreed. I mean, it was like you didn't have to agree. We knew, you know, well, that
one of the things, you know, that is just present with just about everybody I play with. We come off the stage, everybody's soaking wet. So
yeah, you sweat a lot.
Blue Mother Tupelo, they're great friends of mine,
great,
you know, and
great
they
band.
Just moved to Mississippi, but they, you know, living in Nashville for a long time, but I play with them and on some of their recordings, and I mean, both of them, every time we come off the stage, you know, it's just magic, and we just hug each other, and everybody's squishing, you know, their shirts are soaking wet, you know.
You know, you talk about, like, Blue Mother Tupelo. And I see Shovels and Rope, and I don't see much of a difference. I mean, it's almost like, why doesn't everybody know Blue Mother Tupelo? And for folks that don't know Shovels and Rope, but a lot of people do know Shovels and Rope.
Mm.
But just their price tag and everything behind them. And I feel like they get mad at each other, husband and wife, and they're just at each other on stage. There's just two of them. With Blue Mother Tupelo, I feel like the best is yet to come. You know, it's another group in Mississippi that's working hard.
Yeah, I'm glad they moved here, but... Right, this pandemic sort of shut down not only your gig, theirs, the Beat Daddies, you know.
People, that's all they do. I mean, there's a point in my life where the only thing I did in my life was write songs, make records, and tour. So we have a lot of friends in Nashville and in New York and LA and London and all that. That's still all they do. So they've really been out of work, and their bandmates are really out of work. And maybe, you know, I know some songwriters and artists who have been out there who's been living as they live, You know what I mean? Especially as the model of making money and the revenue streams have changed from streaming, you can't count on those sales anymore. So that's gone. So everybody's wanting to work now. I mean, which is great for audiences and fans. They finally get to see everybody. We're in a weird space right now. And I don't think it's going to get better for the music business for another 6 months to about 9 months to a year, maybe over a year.
Scary.
We're going to be out. But there's other industries, obviously. There are plenty of industries that are in the same boat as we are. Mm. We just need to jump in Noah's Ark and just ride around for a while. What do you say? 2 days together. We spent a lot of days and nights together on stage. I'm looking forward to recording with you again soon. And, in the next few weeks, we're going to be together for a week. You're in the Keep Mississippi Beautiful studio, folks. Barry Bays, one of the world-class souls, hearts, men, and musicians I've ever been around. Go to visit Mississippi.org. Study up all our great history and culture. Have a great weekend. Blessings. Barry, thank you.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
I'm Steve Azar. In a Mississippi Minute, all 60 of them, where you can take your sweet time.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.